Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
Welcome back to CAF Chats. I am Major Rhianne Wentz, and I am joined by the esteemed
Major James Barrett.
And if you'll recall, this is the dream team that brought you the Criminal Law Presents CAF Chats on United States versus Williams. And we have no supervision from Major Justin Morgan, so this may be an hour and 45 minutes. What do you think?
Or just supervision in general. I think we had to let the field out there calm down after listening to United States versus Williams. So hopefully we get another gem for you out there.
I mean, I can only think that that will happen. Today we're here to talk about the post-trial delay case of United States versus Valentin and Dino. So the substantive parts of these facts are not particularly relevant. The appellant here was convicted of sexual assault and sentenced to be reduced to the grade of E1. There were other parts of the sentence, but that's relevant to the decision here today. The resolution of his appeal took more than 3 years, or 1,115 days, because of what CAF called processing missteps by the government. And so essentially, the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals went through and determined that there was a violation of Valentin and Dino's post-trial rights, that the post-trial processing did take too long, and that they decided that they were going to grant sentencing relief in the form of changing his reduction in grade from E1 to E2. Now, appellant to CAF argued that that was not appropriate relief within the meaning of Article 66. And in fact, that appropriate relief actually required the Air Force CCA to award meaningful relief. And thus, the Air Force CCA erred when it only gave him what he termed as meaningless relief, because it had no practical benefit.
That's correct, Rhianne. In this case, really solidifies what we were talking about in the last CAF chat that we did about Williams, is about how we have all these statutes out there that have changed, and all this case law out there interpreting those statutes. And the change in the case in the statute has ultimately affected how we do business today and how we view those statutes. So another great lesson for the field of look at the statute, compare it to the case law that you're trying to use to interpret it, and then make your appropriate judgment. But yes, this is a post-trial delay case in which a airman was reduced all the way to E1, and part of the appropriate relief that the CCA, in this case the Air Force CCA, decided was a improvement in the reduction from E1 to E2. So under the current version of Article 66, D2, one of the duties of the Criminal Court of Appeals is to potentially grant relief for excessive post-trial delay, particularly when after entry of judgment has been entered under Article 60C. And in this case, as Major Wentz, you pointed out, the case went back and forth between the convening authority, staff judge advocate, and the CCA, because different documents were missing.
Yeah, can we talk about that for just a second?
Yes, please.
So the convening authority took no action on the findings and sentence in June of 2021, okay? And then the military judge entered the judgment. The case was docketed at the Air Force CCA in October of 2021, so a couple of months later, and then the CCA remanded it back to the chief trial judge of the Air Force trial judiciary because the government had submitted an incomplete record of trial. So this was just government error, and so the case was returned to the Air Force trial judiciary. In April of 2023, a supplemented record of trial was docketed at the CCA, but it was, again, incomplete. It's not clear from this particular opinion. It may be clear in the CCA opinion, but it's not clear from this opinion if it was the same documents, if it was different documents. All we know is at the end of the day, the record of trial was incomplete. In September of 2023, the CCA ordered the government to show cause why it should not remand the case again because of this incomplete record. And then finally, in October of 2023, so remember, the convening authority took action in June of 2021. In October of 2023, the government finally provided these missing documents, rendering further remand unnecessary. And then appellant basically made an argument that his post-trial speedy trial rights had been violated.
That's correct. And they made the argument under two prongs. One, there's a case out there, United States versus Tardif, that talks about giving remedies for post-trial delay. And then you actually have Article 66 D2, which actually allows the convening authority, the CCA, to give relief. And so when you look at 66 D2, it says appropriate relief. They can award appropriate relief. When I say they, the CCA. Now, a lot of you out there thinking, well, okay, appropriate relief doesn't have to be meaningful. How did the appellate divisions come up with this term, meaningful relief? Well, there's a small history of case law, and it really culminates with United States versus Pfluger, and that is actually discussed in this case as well. But in Pfluger, they talked about the post-trial delay has to be meaningful for the accused, or the appellant in this case. I shouldn't call them accused. They're the appellant. And if you look at the question, second issue granted by the CAF in this case, it's almost verbatim the issue granted in Pfluger. So they're clearly trying to match it up. And this goes to the original point we had when we started this podcast, is statutes change. If you go back and look at the 2016 manual, the 2012 manual, 2008 manual, 2005, 2002, all the way down the line, Article 66C has not changed forever. And that is the article that says the duties that the CCA has to do, which is they have to look at the case and they have to be personally convinced and should only approve what should be approved. And in the 2016, in the MJA 2016 Act, we actually changed Article 66. And that's where you finally see Article 66 D2 emerge. And one of the arguments in this case that the appellant makes is, well, Pfluger was in 2007. Congress amended Article 66 knowing that Pfluger existed, and that means appropriate should mean meaningful. CAF goes ahead and does the ordinary statutory construction schemes of canons of construction. They take a look at this case and they say, okay, we're going to do a de novo review of the law. That means we're going to make our own determination of what this stuff means. And remember the layers here. If for review here, CAF can say the law was right, affirm. CAF could say CCA, you got the law wrong, and remand it back to them to do their own analysis again, and then maybe have it come back to the CAF. But right now, the CAF just goes ahead and dives into their statutory construction, and they usually go into two. They go into they use an inquiry about whether the language is unambiguous and plain. And here they ask the basic question, hey, if this is unambiguous and plain and coherent and consistent, we go down this line. To figure out if it's unambiguous, they make the determination by reference to the language itself, the specific context in which the language is used, and the broader context of the statute of whole. Then they seek to discern the ordinary meaning through an analysis of its own constituent words, that is the statute. And then when common words or phrase lack a unique legal meaning, the court may consult lay dictionary in the course of defining it. And in this case, they find that appropriate relief is very plain meanings, and they consult three separate dictionaries. And they go through and they find that they compare meaningful and appropriate. And in this case, meaningful means something different than appropriate. Meaningful means having a meaning or purpose or imparting value. Appropriate means uniformly define appropriate as the dictionaries uniformly define appropriate as that which is suitable or right for the particular situation. And so based upon just the plain meaning of the statute, they go ahead and say that appropriate does not mean meaningful. And because the CCA gave what they felt was appropriate relief, they did not err.
And one of the things that you and I were talking about, and the case doesn't really, the opinion doesn't really delve into this, but one of the things that you and I were talking about as we were preparing for this podcast is this idea that meaningful is almost kind of subjective.
That's correct.
As opposed to appropriate, which is more subjective. As in, when we talk about, you know, meaningful is something that has value. What has value is going to vary from person to person. And the example that I can think of, and it's outside this particular context, is when we're talking to a client about a guilty plea and what sentence they would agree to with the convening authority, you know, some of them, you know, don't necessarily care about sex offender registration. Some of them care more about the jail time. Some of them don't care about jail time, but they are really concerned about sex offender registration, right? And so what has value and what is meaningful to one person may be different from someone else, which if the court had interpreted appropriate to mean meaningful could have created a little bit of a mess, to use a technical legal term.
Yes, because then it would be kind of thrown to the subjective view of the appellant, and that's not what's going to happen here. The other interesting thing is CAF notes, and this goes back to statutory construction, and we're just going to do what the text says. CAF notes immediately, there's nothing in the statute that requires meaningful.
Because it's may, it's not shall.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And any time you're telling a military court, or at least a court like this created by Congress, that they have to do something, that they must do something, grant some type of relief, you're already going to be at an uphill battle. Because remember, we're created by Congress. We're Article I courts. And that means that we are statutory based. And unless you can point to something that gives them the authority, when I say them, the court, the authority to do something, the court is going to be very hard pressed to do this. Article 3 courts, you have judicial power. Article 1 courts, where we're at, we don't have judicial power. So you have to look at some type of statutory or constitutional authorization to say, yes, you military judge, you the CAF, you the CCA, you can do this. And in this case, Congress used plain language and said, no, this is what we're going to do. If you just do simple statutory construction, then somebody could read this case and go, yeah, this was an easy case. But this was a case of first impression. This is the first time we've had Article 66D2 since 2019 looked at. And so, some of these questions are still percolating out there.
Yeah, and we did not talk about this, but one, so we can cut this if it ends up just being an absolute disaster of a conversation. But one of the things I also thought of is there was a series of cases from ACCA that was dealing with post-trial delay, and it was one from one specific installation, and it seemed like ACCA was getting angrier and angrier. And so what they considered to be appropriate relief kind of changed based upon the fact that they kept getting the same issue from the same installation. And so it was almost like the same rationalization that we have for the exclusionary rule, as in this case is going to be altered because we want to teach law enforcement or the field a lesson. And so do you think that that had anything to do with it? Do you think that factors into it, into what constitutes appropriate relief? I guess a more precise question for you, Major Barrett, post-trial expert, would be, could what is appropriate change outside the four corners of the case in front of the court?
In terms of post-trial delay, I am unconvinced. You'd have to import another type of law, such as like disparate sentences, mm-hmm. that you've seen. And I believe there was one just out of ACCA. The name escapes me at the time. But no, it would be a similar type theory. You'd have to have the court try to take judicial notice of these certain types of issues. But I don't think the court is, while in some opinions it appears that that has played into their rationale, I am unconvinced that that is a sustainable, or even realistic appellate standard to apply across the board. I think you're going to be at the end of the day stuck, but you're going to be having to deal with each individual case and each individual facts of that case. With the speedy trial demands, the reasons for the delay, all this other kind of fun stuff. So it's too early to tell, but that's, I think, kind of goes back to this squishiness of relief being granted for post-trial delay. And whose responsibility is it to enforce post-trial delay? There's some ACCA cases out there that indicate that it's the SJA ultimate responsibility, staff judge advocate, the convening authority, in conjunction with the convening authority. There's also appears to be a little bit of an undercurrent that now it's the, in part, the court's responsibility to help enforce these types of issues. But no, it's a interesting issue that I think has the potential to have some more case law develop out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back to this case just briefly for statutory construction, it's important to note the CAF, again, refers to the statutory construction that they came into as the cardinal canon before all others. And they directly quote the Supreme Court from 1992, and they say, in interpreting a statute, a court should always turn first to one cardinal canon before all others. We have stated time and time again that courts must presume that the legislature's what that a legislature says in a statute, what it means, and means in a statute what it says there. When the words of the statute are unambiguous, then the first canon is also the last. Judicial inquiry is complete. And that's why you see this case only appropriately be about 10 pages, and three of them are just the background and facts. And I think that's a good lesson. One last little tidbit that I will add to this is, I know this case has got, says post-trial in it, and if anybody knows me, it says post-trial in it, I get a little excited. But I would encourage the field to not look at this as a post-trial case. Because if you look at this case as a post-trial case, you will be missing out on the bigger picture, the bigger ecosystem of the UCMJ that you're dealing in. And what I mean by that is, this is a case of statutory construction that involves post-trial. I think the lessons in this case can be used to, for the field and the courts, to review the language of other statutes out there. So a new 117 alpha, a new 93 alpha, a new presidentially prescribed sexual harassment article, all the other statutes that are out there, this case can help you apply those. So don't let the ultimate subject matter of the case help you or allow you to lose the actual value of this opinion. And if you start to look at the world that way, or the ecosystem of the UCMJ that way, you'll be able to then solve post-trial issues like this. You'll be able to solve search and seizure, other punitive articles of the UCMJ, looking at regulations, because you're using the same equation to go through the process and get the answers. But if you just look at the answer like, oh, this is a post-trial case, I'm not interested in it, I think you are then becoming in a danger of comparing apples to oranges your entire time doing this, and you're not really fully appreciating how the CAF or a military judge may actually ultimately view these issues.
Okay. Is there anything else that we want to tell the field about this particular case?
No. Remember what you're looking at, what type of case for the principles that it stands for. And as always, doors always open, phone always works, email always works. Shoot me a note. Feel free to contact us if you're in the building, TDY, and you want to sit in on a podcast. We can make that happen too.
We've had to convince Major Barrett to not add a phone line to the recording of this podcast to allow for people to call in. All of that is to say, thank you all so much for spending the time with us today. We hope that it was helpful. We really appreciate all of the feedback that we have gotten from the field. And by feedback, I mean a number of annoyed emails that we have not been putting out, CAF chats. So we're going to get back on a regular schedule. We're going to try and put these out as quickly as possible. But thank you so much for your feedback. We appreciate that you find this helpful, and we're glad that this is time and capacity well spent for the field and to hopefully better the practice of military justice. We look forward to talking at you again. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General's Corps, the Department of the Army, or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.